am I still doing things for COVID? No, we've stopped doing things for COVID. We're not worried about the COVID. You need to be worried about it because you're a very weak person. But we're not worried about COVID. We're over COVID. We've moved past COVID. And that's why I'm actually wearing my Rudy Gobert game-worn jersey, just to prove it can't hurt me and it can't hurt our great people. You're not one of our great people. I said our great people, not our fake news losers, which you are definitely the captain of. And, you know, maybe Gobert didn't have a strong enough virus because he's French, so it might have been sort of a weak version. But I'm wearing his game jersey. Not worried. What I am worried about, however, I'm very worried about our sports teams bending to the vicious ideology of the left, the crazy, nasty left. They want the Indians, our great Cleveland Indians, and our terrific Washington Redskins, who won many Super Bowls. They want them to change the name. That's what they've got. It's a great honor to be named, have a sports team named after you. Okay? And I don't hear any of the Native Americans complaining. I don't hear any of their complaints. It's a lot of liberals who get very upset and want to make a big case against Trump. No, there's no case. We beat the Indians or the Native Americans, if you were probably going to write. By the way, the Indians are a great friend of me, the real Indians, the ones that are run by Nathan Modi over there. You know, the tech support country? They're unbelievable. But the Native Americans, we beat them fair and square, so fairly. And badly, by the way, it was kind of a blowout. And then we still gave them casinos. We gave them great casinos. We gave them sports teams, not ownership, but named, with nice mascots. And they say it's racist. Well, then why don't we take, nobody's asking us to take the casinos away. Maybe we'll do that. Mike, you want to take the casinos away? We'll take them away. Mike thinks gambling is the devil's sport. We will take the casinos away. And it's going to be a real trail of, you know what, tears, okay? Believe me.
We are back with this one. Lady, you know I hate to kick you when you're down, but that's our thing. That's what we do, right? So here's the latest. Your campaign kickoff rally in Oklahoma was a bomb. Miss Coronavirus is living her life thanks to your gross negligence. Your treasonous love affair with Putin has been exposed once again. And your makeup looks like shit. Oh, also, Joe Biden is still beating you in the polls.
It's so crazy what's happening. Here's a guy that doesn't talk. Nobody hears him. Whenever he does talk, he can't put two sentences together. I don't want to be nice or unnice, okay?
You could have just said mean.
I mean, the man can't speak.
I feel like it would have been easier to just say mean.
And he's going to be your president because some people don't love me, maybe.
You said it, not me.
And then they'll say such horrible things. I mean, on the campaign, they'll say such horrible things about me. It's a very unfair business.
The last 4 years with you have been a nightmare. They weren't kidding when they called you, well, unfit. And this final awful year has made it crystal clear that you've really let the country go to
And many other things. The level of dishonesty in the media is, I think they're the most dishonest people I've ever dealt with. Now, not everybody. You have honest, you're an honest journalist. You're a great journalist. You know, it's so unfair.
Your tiny Tulsa turnout was a turkey. Your latest Twitter tirades may suggest that you're starting to surmise your base is getting wise, and I'm really quite concerned that you're depressed. You loser, poor deplorable troll, how hard you try. Pushing panic and unrest aside to jest about unfounded phony fodder. What a guy. Poor deplorable trolls, your fans, your crew. They come flocking by the tens to watch you demonstrate how well you hold your water. Good for you. The thought of losing makes him squirm. He vowed to win a second term when the devil made him sacrifice his soul. So he fights like he's a champ, but he could not defeat a ramp.
He's gonna be your president because some people don't love me, maybe.
What a poor, deplorable troll.
Don't forget, before the China plague came in, and it's a China plague.
Oh. I love that one.
Before that came in, we had the best job numbers we've ever had. If we didn't do tests, we'd look great.
So I said to my people, slow the testing down.
The president says, cut out all that testing.
We'd look great.
A notion health officials find bizarre.
It's quite bizarre.
But see, he's terribly annoyed by all the dead and unemployed because he only cares about his own PR. Girl, please. He doesn't give a crap about decorum. True presidents are noble, not obscene.
Dumb son of
he's so afraid that he might flunk, he just hides out inside his bunker working out his tired, hacky old routine. Cause you're a poor, deplorable troll. No friends, no chums. And I couldn't help but notice all your rallies and events are like your sex life. No one comes. You poor, deplorable troll. It's sad. True.
Kung flu.
All your wacky racist rants have every pundit pro and poll saying you'll lose your election like you've lost your self-control. Kellyanne and Kaylee, girls, come quick. The boss is in a hole.
You believe it?
This poor deplorable troll.
Fair business.
Girl, don't make me do the reprise.
We just surpassed 3 million cases in the U.S., closing in on 1 out of every 100 Americans having it, with cases on the rise in 37 states over just the past 2 weeks. This country, thanks to our president, is doing the worst job against the virus, and it's not even very close. The more you hear from Donald Trump, the more you watch the president in action, the clearer it becomes. You know, I'm reminded of a famous line from the author George Orwell during World War II, saying that because there was no choice whether to fight fascism, right, the war was on at that point, because the war was underway, whether you liked it or not, that to be a pacifist under those specific conditions was to de facto side with the fascists. And in that context, he wrote a memorable line that goes, pacifism is objectively pro-fascist. That line has been cited and repurposed throughout the years, often misconstrued and often misused and abused. But right now it seems fitting. The battle against the virus is not a choice. We cannot opt out of it. So if you take the steps that Donald Trump is taking, not just refusing to combat the virus, you're actively taking steps that will make people sick. You are objectively pro-virus. For instance, they've been dropping some of the precautions at the White House, like temperature checks, because they want to get back to the appearance of normal. We're past this. They're calling federal workers back into workplaces where they don't actually have to be, again, to make people think things are getting back to normal, that we're over the virus, putting them in risk. They are doing big events like sending Vice President Mike Pence to be indoors with choirs where nearly no one is wearing a mask. They are actively trying to browbeat schools into packing as many people into place as possible. This is helping the virus. Donald Trump's actions are on the side of the virus, and that includes the president formally withdrawing the U.S. from the World Health Organization, the organization that, as flawed as it may be, helps the world work together to defeat viruses. Are we going to now join the pro-virus coalition instead? Are we going to found our own World Infection Organization?
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Now we're going to talk with Chrissy Traore. Did I get that right? Hopefully.
Really close.
From the C&B Kitchen in Cairo. Or Cairo, depending on how you pronounce that. And they've got, well, their business is up and running despite the COVID, but they're also having a bake sale on Saturday, July 11th, that benefits the Community Action of Greene County's Food Pantry and the nonprofit grassroots organization Black Land Ownership. Thank you for joining us this morning, Chrissy.
Thanks for having me.
So, first, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your business? What is the C&B Kitchen?
So, C&B Kitchen is, as it says, a kitchen. We focus on sourdough-based breads and croissants. My husband is the baker, and then I'm the chef, and I cook on the weekends. We make the best bacon, egg, and cheese you've ever had. And we also source from local producers and farms and aggregate everything in our shop. So it's all the stuff you'd find in a kitchen.
And where are you guys?
We're located on 145, directly across from Tire Kingdom in Cairo.
And you guys did you open just like a year or two ago?
So we started at the Catskill Farmers Market, selling bread with them. And then from there, we were able to open our own shop on 145. We live and work on the property and have gardens and chickens that lay eggs that we use in the bread. And we have a wood-fired oven. and we opened our physical location about a year and a half ago.
And how was it going before the pandemic started?
It was going great. It was awesome. You know, everything seems to have changed. And it's changing every day. We're just trying to keep up with everything and serve the community as best we can with all the changes that keep happening. And it feels like every day is a new day. So once COVID hit, we kind of pivoted and started doing more groceries because we wanted to keep people, you know, out of the supermarket and offer an alternative to what seemed like a really scary situation at the time. So
yeah, you have like yeast and flour, which were, there was a time there where you couldn't get those things in grocery stores.
Yeah, we pretty much were asking people, what can't you find? And then we'd try to find it. So we had yeast and flour and toilet paper, paper towels, hand sanitizer, you know, some of the basics, but then some of the other things like really good organic milk, which we still carry, and we still carry a direct source grass-fed beef. We still carry, you know, this amazing yogurt from Hudson Valley Fresh, which comes out of Kingston and is a farmer cooperative. So a lot of these things will stay with us. But at first, it was just the basics of what people need, like right now.
And what is it morphed into to now that most things are relatively available at the grocery stores? What are the most popular items that people are ordering in the pandemic?
Our breads are still really popular. I think everyone's a little tired of baking, so they're coming back for, you know, the sourdough breads. We still have yeast and flour available if people can't find it. We have the King Arthur flour, so it's a local flour out of Vermont. Our croissants are really popular. Those are, you know, all different flavors, and I make a weekly fruit filling. We do a savory croissants, so I think that's super popular, too.
Yeah, I can attest that the chocolate croissants are very good. And so is it sustainable, your business in this environment? I mean, I guess you have people ordering online, and I guess you can go to cnbkitchen.com. Is that where you go to order?
Yep, and it's S-E-E, the word, and B-E, kitchen.com. And we actually, funny aside, we named CMB Kitchen. So I'm Chrissy and my husband is Ben, and we like puns. So he came up with CNB Kitchen. So we named it after ourselves, CNB. But we picked a different spelling of it, and it's what you look at and who you are. So we thought that was pretty punny. So yeah, just make sure when you spell it, don't put the C. It's S-E-E and B-E kitchen.com. We offer pre-orders through the website, so you can get exactly what you want, but we are open for walk-ups 10 to 2 Wednesday through Saturday.
And is that been are people coming into the store walking up more, or do you have mostly pre-orders?
So when COVID hit, it really was all pre-order. We didn't have any available for walk-ups, and now we're starting to see the shift a little bit where it's about half and half.
And then tell us about this bake sale on Saturday. What is that? And tell us about the proceeds that you've got set.
Yeah, so we were super inspired by Hannah of Forsythia. Forsythia, she organized a bake sale in Hudson. And we said, you know, we need something like that in Greene County. Some of the protests here kind of fizzled and didn't go very well. So we said, everyone loves cake. Everyone loves cookies. I think we can organize something around food, because food really is what brings people together. So we decided to organize this bake sale, and everyone we reached out to pretty much was like, yep, on board. And then more people called and more people wanted to join in. So we've got a pretty amazing lineup of about 15 businesses now that are donating to the bake sale. We've got a raffle. You can come and bid on prizes to, you know, win baskets. And we've got, you know, baskets of food and booze and some services from local businesses. And we're also having a sheep roast. We are going to have a big barbecue, and it's rain or shine. We got tents. So, yeah, we'll be here on Saturday.
So it's an in-person event, and it's mostly outdoors. Is that right?
It's entirely outdoors. It is an in-person. You will walk through the bake sale one direction and then go find a seat in the woods if you'd like to hang out and eat or take your stuff to go. So we're not going to congregate or have masses of any kind, but it is a pass-through bake sale. Pick up your stuff, get some awesome treats, and enjoy them. And it's a way that we feel safe, that we can support both our local food pantry and also Black Land Ownership, which is a grassroots organization that's just starting up based in New York City.
And why did you pick those two beneficiaries?
So we believe that food really does bring people together. We've worked with Community Action through our Second Serving program, which is where our customers donate funds that we then convert into gift cards and give to folks that need a little hand at the time. And they take that and they can shop in our store. So that's one thing we do all the time through Community Action. So it just made sense that we continue to support their food pantry and food action in our community. And we also wanted to focus on Black Land Ownership because there's a real systemic issue with generational wealth being passed down through Black individuals and not having that ability. And we believe that that needs to change. So this organization is just beginning, and they're starting to gather their resources and build out their online presence, and they'd like to purchase land in rural communities to show people how they can achieve generational wealth and, you know, establish land ownership, land stewardship.
And it seems like Greene County would be a great place for that.
Exactly. It's ripe for the picking.
And I guess we should mention there's also a protest in Cairo on Sunday, July 12th, and one in Greenville on July 18th, too, if you're interested in that sort of thing. Who all is baking for the bake sale on Saturday?
Oh, my goodness. We're so excited and overwhelmed with the amount of support that we've gotten. We've got Potter's Table is going to be bringing marshmallows. Autos of Germantown is doing cookies. Delightful Bites by Nina is bringing all of her hits. She's going to have crumb cake and raspberry bars and cupcakes and all of her delicious stuff. We've got a local Bake at Midnight. She's doing lemon bars. We have, oh my goodness, I should have had the list in front of me. Henning's Local Test Kitchen and Round Top, Julia and Henning, they're bringing Henning's famous popovers. Catskill Bread Company is bringing some of his bread. We have folks coming up from Kingston, like Packed and Lunch Nightly. They're baking pies and scones. And then we have individuals from our community, which I think is the best part. People that just want to take part in this and are home cooks, and they're going to bring their cookies and their family recipes. La Conquadora from Catskill is coming. Mermaid Cafe and Pippi's are doing the raffle. So we've got a ton of great stuff.
Wow, you seem like you're really plugged into the local restaurant scene.
Well, it's a food community, and we all got to be together.
Yeah, is there been much support among other, similar businesses during, I guess, during the COVID pandemic?
Yeah, we've really banded together. I think everyone kind of sees that the more we work together, the better it is. And we're all going to be able to build a community around food and food justice in this area. I should also mention we're getting a lamb from Limekiln Farm in Coxsackie, and my husband will be grilling the lamb. So we're going to have African-style food He's from Africa, and where he's from, they believe that food is a way to connect people, and if there's ever a big event, they always have a big grill, and they put an animal on the grill as a way to share with the community and to spread that love around. So he's going to be doing the whole sheep, and that's his way to kind of connect to his heritage and bring that to Greene County, which I think everyone will enjoy.
Yeah, it sounds like a great event. And we give it the details on the event. It's what time to what time? And
10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday. Like we said, it's a pass-through event, so come on down. Get your baked goods, get your plate of lamb. We have a raffle. You can buy tickets at the event, or you can pre-order them on our website.
And this is an event, and your business is really bringing together a lot of different local businesses or farms. We're asking businesses as they reopen, too, if what help they need from the government, or are you satisfied with federal, state, local assistance for businesses during COVID?
We, for our business, we didn't, you know, I just looked at what was happening with the government and I said, I don't have the time and energy to sit at the website and hit submit 40,000 times to even go through to be selected. And we just said, you know what, there has to be a smarter way, and we have to help ourselves a little bit in this. So we banded with the local farms. We called the Bulich Creekside Farm in Leeds, and I said, Ron, what are you doing with all your produce? And he was like, oh, the Troy Market is closed. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I said, you know what, we are going to buy your produce and make produce bags, and we'll sell those. So that was a way that we could get food to people immediately in March when they needed it, and also support his business. So for us, it's all about just connecting and supporting each other.
And that, it seems like, I mean, from what I've read and talked to people like you on these interviews, is that the food distribution system is really what got upended, that a lot of the food was going to restaurants or going to school cafeterias or places that people used to eat at, and it needed to be redirected to grocery stores and shops like you.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people don't understand that the distribution system doesn't pivot quickly. So taking, for instance, flour, when nobody could find flour, we couldn't find retail flour either, but we are licensed to repackage. So we would buy flour in 50-pound bags and then break them down into smaller bags to sell. So that was available to us to buy these huge bags of flour. But as an individual, what are you going to do with 50 pounds of flour? It's going to sit there forever. that's a lot of bread. So that was a way that we were able to kind of take the resources that we had access to and share them with everybody.
Boy, it just seems like you're right on top of everything. Do you want to tell us
like
about
food? It was funny. When I started trying to think of what the grocery store needed, I had just gone to, I think, BJ's like the week before COVID hit and bought for my own family, you know, our staples. And as we ran out of things, I just got them in the shop and I got enough for everybody. So I said, well, we're out of rice now. It's time to get rice. Well, we're out of pasta now. It's time to get pasta. You know, so I assumed that people would have enough until that point. And then I said, what are the basics? What do we really need that we need to carry in the shop? You know, we weren't going for glamorous stuff or frivolous things, but how do we keep people out of the supermarkets? And we were able to stay out of the supermarkets for almost 2.5 months ourselves, just through what we were carrying in our shop. As things opened up, we feel a little more comfortable going back, but even still, we live through our products. So we're right there with everyone doing the same thing.
Yeah. And if you don't want to go indoors to a grocery store this weekend, you may want to come outdoors to the bake sale on Saturday. Why don't you give all the details again?
Yeah. So we're going to have the bake sale. It's sweet and savory. We're going to have our lamb barbecue, and there will be a raffle. So if baked goods aren't your thing or you're staying away from carbs, we will actually have some keto options and some gluten-free and some vegan. But if that's not your thing, that's okay. Come through at least for the raffle. Really great prizes. It's going to be between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. at 512 Route 145 in Cairo, directly across from Tire Kingdom. And it's a pass-through bake sale, so you'll grab your stuff outside and go. We're doing it rain or shine. We'll have tents. Wear your rain boots. But it'll be a fun time.
And you can go to cnbkitchen.com. That's C as in vision and B as in just being,
who
I guess.
You are.
And kitchen is doesn't have as many definitions.
The
I guess.
Where all the good stuff is.
All right, we've been speaking with Chrissy Traore from the CNB Kitchen. Anything else you guys want to mention?
No, that's it. We're so grateful to be a part of this community, and we really appreciate all the support that the community has given back to us. You know, and we just want to give it right back to this area that we call our home now. And, you know, we're very fortunate and lucky to be here.
All right. Well, thank you guys for all your work, and good luck with the bake sale Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. You too.
WGXC is now broadcasting Village of Catskill meetings live on the radio. Tune in at 7 p.m. Wednesday, July 22nd. The next Village of Catskill meeting live on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. Village trustees debate whether or not to put an All Lives Matter mural on Main Street after they voted against a Black Lives Matter mural for Main Street on June 30th. Tune in to hear the Village of Catskill meeting live on the radio at 90.7 FM or online at WGXC.org Wednesday at 7 p.m. July 22nd on 90.7 FM.
In the wee hours, your mind gets hazy. Radio relay towers. Only...
busy signal. That's what I get when I call you.
What's going on? You're rocking with Young Paris. You're now listening to WGXC 90.7, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Free hands-on radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Tune in every morning at 5 a.m., 7 a.m., and 9 a.m. for all the local news from the WGXC newsroom, from the Public News Service, from the River Newsroom's coronavirus report, to interviews from our partner station WOOC in Troy. You'll also hear the better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate every morning on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, your place on the dial for local news.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Carrie and Donald Gardner of Athens, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grand. Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Green County computer-aided dispatch system is now able to communicate with similar systems outside the county. Green County EMS Deputy Director Randy Omerod said the system went live in October 2019 and will be connected to Ulster County's system on July 14. The county is also looking into the possibility of connecting with Dutchess County within the year as well. He said, and I quote, "It's mind-blowing technology," end quote. Omerod said partnering with Dutchess will be particularly helpful because many calls from Catskill Falls meant for Greene County get inadvertently sent to Dutchess County. He said, and I quote, "We are the first ones in New York State to have two different systems talking to each other. If we have a call that comes to us that is meant for Ulster County, within seconds it will be sent to Ulster. It will be the first of its nature within the state," end quote. The Greene County system operates on the CAD system, funded by a state grant through the State Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Services. In April 2019, Greene County received an Excellence Award from Tyler Technologies, the software company behind the system, for its innovative and heroic use of the system, using it to locate a lost hiker before the system went live. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Caitlin Cordero is reporting for the Poughkeepsie Journal. The Dutchess County Legislature voted July 9th to move forward with its jail bond authorization by defeating a resolution that called for lawmakers to cancel more than $132 million in previously authorized funding for a new facility. The measure was rejected on a vote of 4 in favor and 8 against. Many county legislators said they are tired of, and I quote, "kicking the can down the road," end quote, on the jail that is, and I quote, "failing," end quote, while others called on their constituents to find alternative solutions to the jail. Democrat Poughkeepsie Town Representative Rebecca Edwards said the defeated resolution is not the end of the road for the project. She said she hopes the discussions will continue, beginning with the board meeting scheduled for next week. Edwards said, and I quote, "Everyone is saying that we want to have new programs in the new jail. We want the new jail to be more supportive of people returning to our community with rehabilitative services, so we really need to have a serious conversation. What are those programs? Which ones work? What are we paying for? We hope to initiate that conversation," end quote. According to Deputy County Executive William O'Neill, the jail requires, and I quote, "millions," end quote, of dollars in repairs, and its inefficient design requires a staff of 249 people. The new jail would allow the county to eliminate between 90 and 100 positions, saving more than $4 million annually. Before the vote was taken, nearly 100 people assembled outside on Market Street in Poughkeepsie in front of the Dutchess County Administrative Building in protest of the construction of the new jail. And you can read the full story in the Poughkeepsie Journal. Kenneth C. Crow II is reporting for the Times Union. The Rensselaer Board of Education, July 9th, adopted a proposed $27.19 million budget for the 2020-21 school year. In doing so, the board eliminated funding for the district's interscholastic sports program. Officials are promising a campaign for community donations to cover the $219,000 needed to keep students competing athletically. Cutting the sports budget was part of a package of cuts totaling $524,400 that combined with taking more than $280,000 from the district's cash reserves reduced the proposed tax levy increase from 19.5% to 9%. In June, Rensselaer District voters rejected the $27.71 million original spending proposal by an almost 2-to-1 margin. Superintendent Joseph Cardan said following the board budget decision, there is a community interest in raising funds to restore the sports program. That effort is being led by the Rensselaer Athletic Association and the Alumni Association. The district plans to tie the campaign into its educational theme of advocacy for the 2020-21 year. The amended budget proposal must be approved by a supermajority of 60% of all registered voters on July 28th. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, and COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes? Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
Pipelines, politics, and the power of indigenous protest. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Mini Wichoni, water is life. Whether in the Lakota language or English, it's a simple truth. In North Dakota, water is life banners flew over the indigenous resistance camps that sprang up in 2016 at the confluence of the Cannonball and Missouri rivers, opposing construction of DAPL, that's the Dakota Access Pipeline. Water protectors from over 200 Native tribes across the Americas arrived, along with thousands of their allies. They called DAPL the Black Snake, a 1,168-mile-long pipeline designed to carry over 500,000 barrels of fracked oil per day from North Dakota's Bakken oil fields through South Dakota and Iowa to Illinois, bound for refineries on the Gulf Coast. DAPL's passage through unceded Lakota territory underneath the Missouri River at Lake Wahe threatened the water on which the Standing Rock Sioux tribe depends, along with 17 million people downstream. Over Labor Day weekend 2016, we traveled to Standing Rock with our Democracy Now! News colleagues to report on the pipeline resistance as indigenous water protectors put their bodies on the line, blocking destruction of sacred sites by DAPL bulldozers. We documented DAPL's private security forces pepper spraying, beating, and unleashing attack dogs on the nonviolent protesters. One dog had blood dripping from its nose and mouth, reminiscent of the mastiffs used to attack indigenous peoples in the Americas since the time of Christopher Columbus and the Spanish conquistadors.
Woman over there, she was charging him and it bit somebody right in the face.
The dog has blood in its nose and its mouth.
Our video went viral, viewed over 12 million times in just 24 hours. Within days, President Barack Obama, through surrogates at the Army and the Departments of Justice and Interior, ordered construction halted. A few months and an election later, in January 2017, one of President Donald Trump's first acts in office was to greenlight the project, allowing the pipeline's completion, a huge gift to billionaire Trump supporter Kelsey Warren, CEO of Energy Transfer, which owns DAPL. It's been pumping oil ever since. That is, until a federal judge this week ordered the pipeline shut down and emptied within a month. It was a stunning victory for the tribe, Energy Transfer's appealing the decision. The ruling hinges on a 1970 law called NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, requiring all major projects seeking federal permits to include a rigorous environmental review with public input. Trump is currently trying to strip NEPA of any meaningful regulatory power. Trump's DAPL executive order prompted the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to issue a construction permit without a proper NEPA-mandated environmental impact statement. The tribe sued. After more than 3 years of litigation, U.S. District Judge James Boasberg agreed, forcing the shutdown until the Army Corps of Engineers performs a complete environmental impact statement, which the Corps estimates will take at least 13 months. Responding to this week's court decision, LaDonna Brave Bull Allard, a longtime member of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, who hosted the first DAPL resistance camp on her property along the Cannonball River, said on Democracy Now!
I feel overwhelmed. If people could understand how much I love my home, how much I love my land and my river, it is the greatest thing in all world. I know there's going to be appeals. There must be justice in this world, and there must be accountability. We need, as Native people, not to be invisible in our own lands.
This was not the only victory this week for pipeline opponents fighting for a sustainable future. Duke and Dominion Energy announced their scrapping plans to build the 600-mile Atlantic Coast Pipeline, slated to carry fracked gas from West Virginia to North Carolina. The companies blamed expensive litigation and the costs of dealing with continued protests for their decision.
There was an awful lot of opposition to this.
That's Donna Chavis, senior fossil fuel campaigner for Friends of the Earth and an elder of the indigenous Lumbee Nation in North Carolina, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. She described the intersectional organizing that helped defeat the pipeline.
We were working up and down the pipeline in resistance and opposition. We found ourselves in a wonderful situation of crossing the boundaries between race and class and bringing together the indigenous and African-American communities.
There are over 200,000 miles of active petroleum pipelines in the United States, and ongoing campaigns against pipeline construction projects like the Keystone XL, Enbridge Line 3 in northern Minnesota, and the Coastal GasLink pipeline in British Columbia. This resistance is led by indigenous frontline communities with growing solidarity movements joining them. If we're to avoid catastrophic climate change, we have to leave the oil, gas, and coal in the ground. Now is the time to launch a green recovery from the pandemic, investing in renewables, not pipelines. As LaDonna Brave Bull Allard observed,
we're here for the long journey. It is not about who's right or wrong. It's about how do we live in the future.
I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Now we have a special guest joining us on the phone is Hudson Common Council President Tom DiPietro. Can you hear us, Tom?
Sure can, although I wouldn't call me special, Tom. I'm there all the time, you know, easily available and every Thursday afternoon, but in my other role as a co-host. But, Tom, I wanted to call in because there are a couple of things happening at the council in the informal meeting this coming Monday at 7 p.m. It's a Zoom meeting, and the connection will be, the invitation will be posted online during the day on Monday. But that night, we're going to be having pretty much an open discussion of the Galvin Project on North 7th Street. It's a housing project of potentially 74 units of mixed income, with spread across the spectrum of AMI, which means average median income. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but at the low end, you know, you have people who are paying roughly, the people who come who rent earn the 20 to 40% of average median income. Then you have the middle range of 40 to 60, I believe. And then the last, or maybe it's somewhere in there. And then the last is 80 to 90 or 100. And that's established by HUD, not by, you know, the city or anybody else involved. So anyway, people have been clamoring for a chance to talk about it in public, and we're going to do that Monday night at 7 p.m. And interesting, the same night, we have a special meeting at 6 p.m. where the Common Council is going to be considering the latest round of Tourism Board grants. As you may know, Hudson, when it first started its lodging tax, it designated a percentage of that tax to go to a tourism board. And the idea of that board was to promote tourism, market tourism, as it says in the law. But and if there's ever been a time where that seems urgent and useful, it's right now, given the pandemic, and, you know, trying to help bring people in the proper way to Hudson events in the future. And it's also helped providing some funding to local businesses and nonprofits who, you know, are pretty strapped for cash these days. So it's serving a great purpose, and they've given a bunch of grants already, and there's more to come. So there's a lot of stuff going on, not to mention, we're also close, finally, to our short-term rental regulation, which should be ready and completely and voted on in August. So, you know, lots of cool things are happening at the council. But most importantly, Monday night, 7 p.m., if you want to talk about the impending or proposed Galvin housing project on North 7th Street. Tune in to the Common Council at 7 p.m. on Zoom. And the invitation is available on the City of Hudson website. You go to the calendar page, which is right up front, click on there, and it'll have the Zoom invite on Monday.
So an informal meeting means there's fewer votes and more chance for the public to give input? Am I right, or am I totally wrong?
Exactly. No, you're totally right. We introduced some of the resolutions that we'll vote on the week following, but its informality does encourage more public participation.
So if you want to comment on these three issues, this is the best time to do that.
Yeah, especially the Galvin project, because that's the one that's there'll be more conversation about the short-term rental, because that really doesn't come up till August, and then of course because it falls under a law, the mayor has to hold a public hearing for that as well. So that has some more stages in the process. Whereas the housing project, we're not actually voting on the project per se. What we're voting on, or we're being asked to vote on, is whether to give this project a pilot. And a pilot stands for payment in lieu of taxes. And they can be controversial because it means the city is not getting what the building or the project normally would cost or pay in property taxes based on its assessment. They're paying an alternative fee, partly because, it takes time to build, so you don't want to be charging them the exact final tax amount, but also because it's a truism that affordable housing doesn't get built without a pilot. It's a way of not so much subsidizing a project, but giving a tax break, which is a form of subsidizing to a project. But there's a lot of in terms of this project, though, what exists there is paying much less than what this project would eventually pay.
The pilots that are most controversial are often given to large corporations or businesses with a promise of many jobs coming to the area or something like that.
Exactly.
This is different because it's difficult to get people to put up, to spend money and construct affordable housing because they get less rent because they're doing affordable housing. By definition,
correct,
they get less rent. So the reason for the pilot in a housing project is to allow a company to get the kind of investment it would get back in a less affordable housing project.
Exactly. And in this case, the entity behind it is a nonprofit, the Galvin Initiatives Foundation. They're somewhat controversial, and I understand that, but they're nonprofit, and any profits that they would make eventually, and they probably wouldn't make any profit for years, would go back into their foundation, which is committed to creating more affordable housing throughout Hudson. So this kind of is the first volley in Kamal Johnson, the mayor Kamal Johnson's, and my own pledge to bring more affordable housing to Hudson. The first thing we did last year was help the Hudson Housing Authority bring back online 25 units at Bliss Towers that were sitting empty. And through a financing project, those units will be available within the next year, 25 low-income housing units. So, it's delivering on campaign promises in some ways.
There's a lot of anecdotal evidence that people that work in the service industry, the essential workers of Hudson, let's say, can't afford to live in Hudson.
Right.
Is there facts? I mean, I'm saying there's a lot of anecdotal. Is there facts to back that up?
Oh yeah. Well, yes. In fact, the city worked with a group from Newburgh, who did what we call the Strategic Housing Action Plan. And one of the things they noted is, yes, we could use affordable housing at the low end, but definitely in that middle category, the service workers, who are the gig economy people, they're the ones being priced out and having a harder time staying in Hudson. And, you might like that because they're moving over to your county.
Well, that brings me to a question I was going to ask you about the county over here, Greene County. As your position as a as Common Council President running the Hudson meetings, is it kosher, or what scale of kosher is it for a town or a village say a village in Greene County, to take a vote, not at a public meeting where the public can see it, but in email.
Totally not allowed. If you look at the governor's executive order about how to conduct meetings under the open meeting rules under COVID, no such thing is allowed. You can't do that. You absolutely can't do that. And so, in fact, if that happened, I would contact the governor's office, because that's clear. It has to be streamed in some fashion.
So if the Catskill Village president admitted at the meeting this past Wednesday that the vote was held to not allow a Black Lives Matter mural on Main Street was taken over email, that it was a unanimous vote and it was done over email. There was no meeting between June 24th when they had a meeting and June 30th when the announcement was made. So you could file an Article 78 or you, what do you say? What would that do? That would just force them to take the vote again.
Well, yeah. I guess the best thing you do is get them to take the vote in public again. Are they trying to hide their votes?
No, they said it was a unanimous vote, but they did it on email.
Yeah, no, totally unallowed by the law. So, you could actually get that decision overruled, and the basis of most Article 78s is the phrase arbitrary and capricious. And that does seem like, why suddenly did they have the vote offline for that alone? It seems kind of arbitrary and capricious in my view.
Well, there's no telling what else they did. I can't say that was it alone.
Exactly. Wow. Now, here in Hudson, I stream all the city meetings. And we were doing this before even COVID struck on WGXC and our stream partnership. But it's become even more so under COVID that we do that because it's required. But we also, some meetings are on Zoom, some meetings are on YouTube. I mean, we're covering, and this year we have minutes taken at every single committee meeting. We're trying as hard as we can to be completely open.
Have they passed a law that the recordings have to be archived yet? Or I think I heard talk that was in Albany and under discussion.
No, they haven't just said the recordings, but, what you're supposed to do, according to the governor's executive order, is have a literal transcript available. It doesn't say how soon, but you're supposed to have a literal, the exact words. So a recording transcribed.
So back to the Hudson Common Council meeting this Monday. There's a special meeting at 6 o'clock. What is the special meeting about?
The special meeting is the one where we talk about tourism board grants. And then at 7 o'clock, we have our informal meeting, where the main subject will be of open discussion will be the Galvin property project on North 7th Street here in Hudson, a potential 74 units of mixed income housing with a lot of low income housing in it as well. So it could be a great project,
If you want to comment on the meeting, you have to put in the Zoom information that will be available on the Hudson website on Monday.
Correct.
And if you just want to listen, you can just listen to the meeting through the WGXC web stream at any WGXC.org website. You click on listen.
Correct.
All right. Anything?
Thank you, Tom.
Anything else you want to tell us about the meeting, or tell us what's coming?
No, I think that covers it. And I just hope a lot of people, because I don't want to, it's hard during these pandemic days to really, to get the announcement out, to get people to participate. And I'm hoping that we'll have enough participation that. And, there's on our website, there's been an invitation to comment for a couple months now. And we had 12 at last count, 12 comments submitted. But I know a lot of people are interested in the project. So I hope they get word and get their feelings known.
And what is the deadline to post a comment?
It's still open. You can still do it.
All right. All right, so we'll be tuning into the informal Hudson Common Council meeting, the special meeting first at 6, and then the regular meeting at 7.
Correct. Thanks a lot, Tom.
All right,
appreciate it.
Thank you.